Three Righteous Mamas is a podcast brought to you by Signal that is on a mission to transform our country. We tell the stories that matter, celebrate the power and hope of pissed off mamas who are building a better future for all of our children. And let me tell y'all, I have lots of pissed off to share with y'all. But before we go there, I'm Muna Husseini.
And I'm Christina Sensun Ramirez.
I'm Martha Pincoffs.
And we're here to talk about weathering what my friends are calling SnowVid 2021 in Texas.
It's been brutal. I mean, Muna is talking to us from her car right now because you're on day six of intermittent electricity.
Well, it was, 10 hours off, 5 hours on, a day of electricity, and then 5 hours of no electricity. Then we had electricity for 2 days and now it's off. And in that period of time, it was completely freezing. And then we also had no water because we had pipes. Luckily, they were on the outside of our house bust. So our inside of our house we had no flooding inside, but I am tired and worn out in a way that I never have been in my life. And I'm actually just watching the power crews, like they're working on our street right now. And I have so many feelings. I have so many feelings, but I'm glad they're here.
Yeah, I bet you are glad that they're here.
Yeah, for folks that aren't in Texas, I mean, it felt apocalyptic. Mm-hmm. And it may have been freezing in Texas, but it felt like hell on earth. Because we still, right now, it's a week later and still 13 million people, that's nearly half of our state's population, has no clean drinking water. And there are people that don't even have water at all across the state. Even if they could try and boil it to clean it, they don't have anything coming out of their pipes. Thousands and thousands of people's pipes burst. And we have so many low-income folks, think about how much it costs to get a pipe burst and the fact that, 69% of Americans don't have more than like $1,000 in savings. 50% don't have more than $400 sitting around. The human cost of it. Like Muna, I am so like, I don't know how you did it. Cause me and Martha didn't lose heat. We had other issues, but we didn't lose heat. Cause it was brutal for your babies. Like, how'd you do that with your babies?
Well, I also want to spend a moment putting this into context because we do not have infrastructure in Texas to deal with the cold. I used to live in Colorado, so there's no one outside who is clearing the streets. So the streets are full of ice and full of snow. Second, no one in Texas knows how to drive in ice, which is why you see these pileups. But third, I'm lucky that I went on a ski trip in December. But before that, I did not own proper thermals. I did not have any cold weather clothing that's waterproof. I didn't own any shoes that are waterproof. I didn't have gloves that were waterproof. I had, like the cute little ones that you put on that don't do anything. And I am so glad because when it got cold in my house, we were living in our ski gear. Otherwise, I wouldn't have had anything to put on that I could have lived in other than blankets. I don't think people understand that. And second, when our pipes burst outside and we couldn't get the water off, we actually had to come and figure out where our water main was outside. And we literally had snow and ice water melted on our curb and on our cul-de-sac. And as we were digging up the water main, having to get all of the water and dirt out of the way and the ice and the snow that kept filling in, we had like 5 neighbors come out and help us dig. And I think we made it through because of our neighbors. Mm-hmm. And everyone taking care of each other and everyone sharing. It was just ridiculous. We're lucky because our house has a gas stove. So we were able to cook and we were able to boil water, but very few people on the street had that. Mm-hmm. And because my parents bought us a deep freeze, we have like a deep freezer and it was like all this stuff my mom had put in there. And I was like pulling out meat and frozen pizzas and corn dogs. And like, so thankful that we had food and we were able to make it. Otherwise you couldn't get to a grocery store.
And even if you got there, there wasn't anything there. And even right now, there are lines around the blocks at grocery stores. I went to one grocery store and I was just about to get in yesterday. And then the electricity went out and they said, you can't let people back in. So then I drove to another grocery store and then I waited in line and I got in. And they had like 2 Mexican squash chayotes left, 3 pineapples, and the freezer, I'm not joking, it was completely, there were nothing. 2 pints of ice cream. There wasn't pizza, there wasn't bread, there wasn't frozen vegetables, there wasn't anything. There were 2 pints of ice cream left. It looked like they had been robbed. It looked worse than in the pandemic beginning days.
It did. It took me right back to the early pandemic days, but this was the level of devastation in the people waiting in line. We live across from the HEB at Hancock Center, and right down the street from Fiesta, there were over 300 people in line, just wrapped all the way around the building, needing food. And they're wearing pajama pants, and they're not like, nobody's prepared for the cold. And underneath the highway where we live, just right across the street from our house, is a huge homeless camp. And there were people there the entire time when it was 6 degrees. They were asking for firewood. They could not keep their water. The water just kept freezing. They didn't have any potable water that they could get to. They didn't have anywhere to put it that it wouldn't freeze. It felt apocalyptic. It really did.
And it brought to the, you know, I want to say, like, what people need to understand is, like, how did this happen in the state that produces the most energy of any state in the country? And people need to understand that it's millions and millions of people were put in a life-threatening situation, and people died, including an 11-year-old boy that died of hypothermia in his own home.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard the story, I sort of started crying because I thought of my own baby, you know, mm-hmm. and just like, that's somebody's baby, 11-year-old.
I thought of my parents who are elderly, who I couldn't even get to in Dallas. And there it was like teens in their house. And I'm so glad that my sister happened to be visiting. Otherwise, they were on their own, and they can't, like, my parents can't really see well when they drive, and they couldn't go anywhere. And then actually their pipes burst inside their house. And so in freezing temperatures, they had to deal with that. And again, they're 70. My parents have arthritis. And I read that story about that little boy, and I was out of my mind with worry, thinking about my parents or like all these homeless people or people just in their homes who can't get warm and they have no other choice. And we're in the middle of a freaking pandemic, don't forget.
Yeah,
and so right. Then are we all supposed to just like pile in and be like, oh, it's cold outside, no one's going to get, you know, whatever stupid disease is out there.
Yeah. My friend Christine, she has a 10-month-old little baby girl, and they lost heat and water for days, and they live in a more rural place, so that there was like nowhere to go, and she just tried to keep her baby warm with her body heat.
Mm-hmm.
And her brother that lives in Huntsville, another town, was stranded without food and water. Her 75-year-old grandmother that lives alone and is diabetic here in Austin was lost power and freezing by herself in her home. So that's just one family. So then take that pain, that fear, that desperation, and multiply it by the millions. And that's what we've been living in Texas. And what I want people to understand is, like, how does this happen, right? Well, it happens because our elected leaders statewide had ignored the warnings for over a decade. They knew for over a decade that something like this could happen.
And even longer, they were warned first in 1989. Was the first warning came in 1989.
Right.
And then another warning came in 2011.
Yeah, in 2011, 4 million people lost their heat in Texas, or their power, during an ice storm. And they were warned, you need to weatherize your system. You need to prepare for extreme weather events from climate change. And you guys need to consider connecting to the national grid, because you can't transfer energy from anywhere else. And if something happens to your grid, you're screwed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure people across the country saw, we had Ted Cruz fly to sunny Cancun during this moment. We had our governor, Greg Abbott, get on national TV and blame the Green New Deal, which we don't even have in Texas, and wind turbines, all which were just total lies and bullshit. And we had our former governor, Rick Perry, say that Texans didn't mind going without heat as long as they didn't have to deal with the federal government.
I'd like him to come and say that on my street. I'm sure all my neighbors and I have a lot to say to him.
Yeah.
I'm just going to stop right there.
No, I mean, it's like, it's a, I was like, when I read that one, I was like incensed. I was like, people are dying and you want to lean into this public policy disaster, like disaster. Like, I just like, it's like, I'm used to being appalled by the callousness and arrogance of our elected officials, but it's become, I'm sorry, I have to cuss. It's become fucking life-threatening. Yes. Life-threatening.
Unnecessarily so. And I'm so tired. I am so tired of other people making money and the cost being passed on to someone else. And you can put that as far as government goes or business goes or whatever. We really have to redefine what it means to win together, because I'm sick and tired of living in a transactional world where someone wins and then someone else has to lose. And I'm done with that paradigm. I'm so done with it. Ever felt alone in a room full of people? If so, you'll want to check out the Only One in the Room podcast, where host Laura Cathcart Robbins and her co-host Scott Slaughter talk to actors, influencers, musicians, filmmakers, CEOs, writers, supermodels, and of course, real people about their incredible Only One stories. This podcast is for anyone who has ever felt alone in a room full of people, which is to say, this podcast is for everyone.
And when you look at like the sheer volume of the losses, like just in this, on this call, my friend had a baby 4 weeks ago, a 4 week old baby that he is sleeping in his car with. And he has like put on his body on the night that it was 6 degrees. It was 6 degrees. My parents were without, I mean, they didn't have heat or water for like 5 days. They slept on a blow up mattress in my dad's office, which they were lucky to have access to. And I think we saw, which we always see in Texas, we're getting used to natural disasters here. We've had plenty of them now, and we will have many, many more. This is an anomaly from where we sit today. It is not an anomaly going forward, because this is the world that we live in now, and we have to act like it and we have to prepare for it. And the way that the deregulation has affected this, deregulation just means that the energy companies are free to make money without government oversight, essentially. That ERCOT is supposed to be the overseeing body of it. But they were told they needed to winterize in 2011. The Texas legislature passed something that said, hey, let us know, not you have to, but let us know what you're going to do to weatherize your systems. There are no teeth in it. It's all performative. It's all performance. And so when the choice is, do I make more money or do I invest the money in making this system safe for people? They make more money. Jerry Jones is thrilled with how much money he just made at the expense of lives.
Yeah. And Jerry Jones, for people that don't know, is oil magnate that just, you know,
that also owns the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah. So they just said, like, some of it you could just only comical about just like how callous these people are. It'd be comical if it wasn't so tragic, like the consequences of it. You know, you had Donnie Trump Jr. saying people are just mad at Ted Cruz because he's a Republican. And I'm like, I'm not mad at Ted Cruz because he's a Republican. I'm not mad at Greg Abbott because he's a Republican. I'm mad because they don't give a damn about the people of Texas. I am mad because we have people in public office that have no interest whatsoever in public service. And I'm mad because they will put the interest of their donors always before the people of Texas. You know, and that's what makes me mad. And I don't know what else to do but to vote out these terrible, I don't want to cuss too much, but it's just like, it's oozing out of me. But like these terrible, terrible people that have just like no heart, no empathy, no concern. And also like are willing to deny reality and the suffering of people. So Greg Abbott, you know, like we're going to continue, like you said, Martha, we're going to continue to experience these extremes because the consequences of ignoring climate change are here. Yep. And Greg Abbott says he's not sure if climate change is real because he's, quote, not a scientist. But I don't have any expectation that my governor be a scientist, but I do have an expectation that he listen to energy experts, that he be able to listen to scientists that have warned them for years and years. Greg Abbott has been our governor since 2015. Ted Cruz has been our senator since 2013. And that time, neither of them have put forward plans to deal with the effects of extreme weather events due to climate change in Texas. Neither of them said, let's explore connecting to the national grid. Neither of them, and Greg Abbott didn't mandate ERCOT to weatherize or any of the power plants or gas lines that heat people's homes. So it's a total, total disaster. And I don't know what else to do but to vote these people out.
They won't do it again. They will talk a big game right now. They will talk tough about ERCOT and what the people of Texas have been through, but they have shown us every single time what they choose, and they choose to retain power, and they choose to please their donors, and they choose to ignore the health and safety of the millions of people that live in Texas. And they do it today. They have not suffered any electoral consequence for those choices. And so we have to have a long enough memory and a strong enough plan to help people understand that the only way that that these things change, that we start to build systems that are meant for resilience and restoration, happens with new leadership. That is the only thing. These people will not take a protective stance of the people for the people of Texas. They will take a protective stance for deregulation and for protection of profit. That is the MO.
I wish they were talking tough. I wish someone said, oh, you know what? It's too bad that these things weren't done, but now we need to do them because we know better. But we're not even hearing that. You know Everybody makes mistakes. I wish we weren't in this position, but like they had warnings and they didn't do anything about it. And so at least be like, hey, okay, like we know better. We're going to fix X, Y, and Z. But I'm not even hearing that from our leaders, past, present, future, whatever you want to call it. I love that Beto drove from El Paso and brought water to Austin, right? AOC is in Texas, not only fundraising, but also out here on the ground doing the work that I wish our leaders were doing. Right. And if nothing else, I will say our local leaders and neighbors and organizations showed up. There's a group in Austin on Facebook called Runner City. They're folks that do errands and I don't know what. Like, I was just in tears watching the amount of work they were doing, like giving people rides, getting people supplies, showing up. Andy Kaminsky, shout out to you and all the people doing amazing work. But groups like that, like, they showed up, and like our Buy Nothing group on Facebook was killing it. And in the only way that is possible to say, in a good way, because babies were getting milk and diaper and people were getting help for their pets and people were getting water. There's somebody in our neighborhood has an ATV and they were driving around like helping people get stuff.
It's incredible and it's inspirational, but I also want us to remember that this is what our government should be doing for us, because you hear during Hurricane Harvey and now our governor and Republicans being like, we don't need the government, we'll just all do it ourselves. And people are stepping up, you know, out of love and concern for their neighbors. I believe government could actually be an extension of what's best about us. Like, scale up that love and concern, that caring that your neighbor or other people are doing across the state. And scale that up. No nonprofit, no matter how wonderful they are or good Samaritans there are, can deliver the scale of service and support that Texans need, like our government. And they are sitting on the sidelines and refusing to do their damn job. It's like, derelict of duty for sure. And so I just like, I'm grateful for everyone, but let's remember who actually has the greatest potential to provide all of the care and resources we need. They're just choosing not to. They're choosing to go to Cancun. They're choosing to get on TV and protect the interests of the interests of their oil and gas donors and lie to Texas families. Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the thoughts that kept occurring to me as this was unfolding and just watching our infrastructure fail. We live in a failed state this week. What kept occurring to me is that this is the visible part. Because it's so gross and because it was under such pressure, it is impossible to ignore the failure of the electrical grid and the water systems, for example. But if you look at the neglect that has been applied to all of our systems, this is what the public education system has been through in Texas, with the neglect that it has suffered over the years and years and years that it's been underfunded, that the teachers haven't been cared for. And it is at the hands of the few heroic citizens, that the teachers that show up every day and do their very best despite conditions that are untenable. And this is just, I think of all of the other systems in our state that have suffered this level of neglect under Republican leadership for as long as they have been in charge. And it makes my blood boil.
Well, back to Christina's point, government's doing what it's supposed to. It's serving the few. It's serving the wealthy. It's serving.
That's not what it's supposed to do. That's what it's choosing to do.
Well, it's kind of designed that way, right? Like, there's this facade of the people by the people, but like, things really happen for the connected and for the lobbying groups, right? The average person isn't necessarily getting service. And by the way, like, service is just getting cut back, right? Like, it also just makes me think about the whole, you know, states' rights versus federal, and like that whole, let's be honest, baked in racism basis of our government. And that's how we've ended up here. So let's just call it what it is, right? And I, longer conversation, because people seem to not even like realize like the institutionalized racism right there. But like, this is a tragedy that is impacting way more than just marginalized folks.
Today, we want to tell you about Future Hindsight, a weekly podcast that is a great companion to our show. It aims to spark civic engagement, inspire hope, and reinvigorate our social contract. Join host Mila Atmos, a mama and an immigrant, as she takes a deep dive into the issues through interviews with experts and citizen changemakers. Check out their current season on how inequality and racism is hard-coded into the American system. Listen to the Future Hindsight wherever you listen to podcasts, or find them at futurehindsight.com. Yeah, and the people that can least afford it are having to bear the brunt of it. Low-income communities that like couldn't get to grocery stores, didn't have great insulation in their houses, lost electricity, had their pipes burst, lost a week of work, that like live hand to mouth. Like, the crisis isn't over, but I think you're both right. Like, look, crisis exposes failures in a system. Mm-hmm. And I agree that this is the Republican design of government, right? Their design of government is that government's job is only to protect private property, not life, not guarantee basic things to people. That is their design. I do believe that, like, in key moments of our country, what I don't want us to do is give up on government, because this is our government. This is our state, right? Our country. And there is no better institution that can deliver the scale of services and support we need. And our country, whether we created Medicare, Social Security, or the minimum wage, or we took on monopolies like and broke them up, that we're really controlling our entire economy and government, it's always taken ordinary people organizing. Mm-hmm. And like, right now is that moment where the righteous anger Muna, that you feel like watching your kids be freezing, the righteous anger, Martha, that you see like your the homeless people in front of your house not having any place to go, the righteous anger that I feel like seeing friends and families that didn't like been without heat and water and have no idea how they're going to pay for the consequences of all of it. Like, we need to channel that righteous anger into action. Mm-hmm. And action into helping our neighbors, but action into organizing long-term to take
power back
our government for us. Like, this is ours. And it's going to continue to happen because no amount of like good Samaritanship and nonprofit support is going to do as much as if we had a functioning government that actually really cared about its people. Like, if they actually mobilized and planned and took warning seriously when someone says millions of people, thousands of people's lives could be put at risk. And they should say, God damn, we need to do something now versus, man, we'll see what happens.
I cannot imagine living with the consequences of that.
I don't think they take any responsibility. There's no responsibility.
I don't either. No, I can't imagine
it. You're on a plane and you go to Mexico to drop off your kids on vacation. Like, I kind of told my kids, like, hey, don't even go cross the street because there's ice, right? Like, and also on my street, when like one set of kids are playing outside, all the kids want to come outside and play. And like, we have snow gear, so we can go and do that. But then if my kids, like the other kids see my kids playing, then they're going to feel like it causes like pressure for the other parents. Right. So then I was just like, no, like, let's stay inside. I don't want you going anywhere. Let's just be responsible.
I mean, so I opened my home. I called different people that I knew were, especially people that were elderly that lived by themselves. And I called and asked if they wanted to stay with me. So I found some different folks, some people who had already found places to stay. And I called Jim Hightower, the last Democrat to serve in statewide office that's, you know, alive here in Texas. And he said, oh, I'm fine. I'm at a hotel. I lost heat and water. And then he called me 2 hours later and said, the hotel lost heat and water. Can I please come stay with you? So Jim Hightower came to my little house in East Austin and stayed with us. It never occurred to him to purchase an airline ticket and flee to the sunny beaches of Cancun. You know, he was in my house trying to figure out how we could help people. Mm-hmm. So like, who you vote for matters. Who you vote for matters.
Yeah.
And if they don't care about the things you care about and that you need, they're not going to, those things are not going to manifest because their priorities are different.
I know they haven't released that 11-year-old boy's name, but like my heart is heavy for everyone that lost their life. And that little boy like is just like sitting with me. You know, like the pain for his family, the pain of like a beautiful little, I'm sure was a beautiful little boy with so much like life and future and potential and heart in him gone. Mm-mm. And I feel like I wanted to learn his name so that like his name is a call to action. Mm-hmm. For all of us to stay focused on the cost and the consequences of having people in office that don't really care about us.
Sending up a prayer for him, his family, all of those who have suffered, all those who are suffering right now, no matter what or who you believe in or whatever you invoke, let us all build that world that we want for all of our children. And as much as we can do as parents, as much as we can do for our own children, we need our government behind us because there are things outside of our control and that's their purview. And we all have to be in this together. And so I love the call to action to have our memories be long and to mobilize and to organize and to hold our leaders and our institutions accountable because it's the only way we can not be in this position again. And I'll be damned if my family or anyone I know is in this position again. It was so painful, y'all. And I am not a crybaby. I grew up, my parents took me to India every year where we didn't have power. We used to have to like store water in buckets, you know, boil water and shower in buckets. I'm used to that. But to have it during freezing weather with no food, no heat, no way to stay warm, no way to nowhere to go. I mean, it was impossible. And the worry and the stress and not knowing when power was going to come back and not having water, it all those things together were just so impossible. So never again. I don't ever want to be here again. I mean, even just having the power go out, I'm sitting here thinking like, oh, thank God it's like 70 degrees.
Like we're the three righteous mamas. And we named our show that because there's like a righteous anger and moral courage in motherhood. Mm-hmm. And I actually feel like that's what this really moment calls for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in our state, we have the saying, don't mess with Texas. But when you mess with our babies, when you mess with the safety of our families, we get righteously angry. Mm-hmm. And that's going to propel us out of this moment. Because no family deserves to have gone through what millions and millions of people went through in our state, because it was all preventable.
Yes, it was.
And the only way we're going to prevent it from happening again, I guess there's two ways. It's like, one, get these men to do their damn jobs. Or two, vote them out of office and put people in that actually want to serve the people of Texas. And that's what I'm committed to. I'm committed to the second choice, because I don't trust these men to do anything for anyone but their big donors.
I don't believe the first choice is viable. Like, I don't think that one has legs. The second choice absolutely does. And I think there we need mamas involved, and we need it in 2022. This needs mm-hmm. to be done.
Yeah.
So call to action for us, for people listening. Get out there, learn what it means to run. Think about the things that you care about. Make it happen.
And like we have heard from Alicia and others, this, it starts by knowing your neighbors. Like we've had the impetus to get out and check on our neighbors. That's what we've done this week. We have been in community. We have been back in community with the people that we are going to deliver this change with. And it's going to happen on our blocks, in our cul-de-sacs, on our streets. And that is the way that we will deliver this.